he brooded darkly, thinking of war. For he had learned in Middle-earth of the strength of the realm of Sauron, and of his hatred of Westerness. And now there came to him the masters of ships and captains returning out of the east, and they reported that Sauron was putting forth his might, since Ar-Pharazôn had gone back from Middle-earth, and he was pressing down upon the cities by the coasts. And he had taken now the title of King of Men, and declared his purpose to drive the Numenoreans into the sea, and destroy even Numenor, if that might be. Great was the anger of Ar-Pharazôn at these tidings, and as he pondered long in secret, his heart was filled with the desire of power unbounded and the sole dominion of his will. And he determined, without counsel of the Valar, or the aid of any wisdom but his own, that the title King of Men he would himself claim, and would compel Sauron to become his vassal and his servant. For in his pride he deemed that no king should ever arise so mighty as to vie with the heir of Earendil. Therefore he began in that time to smithy great hoard of weapons, and many ships of war he built, and stored them with his arms. And when all was made ready, he himself set sail with his host into the east. And men saw his sails coming up out of the sunset, dyed as with scarlet and gleaming with red and gold, and fear fell upon the dwellers by the coasts, and they fled far away. But the fleet came at last to that place that was called Umbar, where was the mighty haven of the Numenoreans that no hand had wrought. Empty and silent were all the lands about when the King of the Sea marched upon Middle-earth. For 7 days he journeyed, with banner and trumpet, and he came to a hill, and he went up, and he set there his pavilion and his throne. And he sat him down in the midst of the land, and the tents of his host were ranged all about him, blue, golden, and white, as a field of tall flowers. Then he sent forth heralds, and he commanded Sauron to come before him and swear to him fealty. And Sauron came. Even from his mighty tower of Barad-dûr he came, and made no offer of battle. For he perceived that the power and majesty of the kings of the sea surpassed all rumour of them, so that he could not trust even the greatest of his servants to withstand them, and he saw not his time yet to work his will with the Dunedain. And he was crafty, well skilled to gain what he would by subtlety, when force might not avail. Therefore he humbled himself before Ar-Pharazôn, and smoothed his tongue, and men wondered, for all that he said seemed fair and wise. But Ar-Pharazôn was not yet deceived, and it came into his mind that, for the better keeping of Sauron, and of his oaths of fealty, he should be brought to Numenor, there to dwell as a hostage for himself and all his servants in Middle-earth. To this Sauron assented as one constrained, yet in his secret thought he received it gladly, for it chimed indeed with his desire. And Sauron passed over the sea, and looked upon the land of Numenor, and on the city of Armenolos in the days of its glory, and he was astounded. But his heart within was filled the more with envy and hate. Yet such was the cunning of his mind and mouth, and the strength of his hidden will, that ere 3 years had passed he had become closest to the secret counsels of the king. For flattery, sweet as honey, was ever on his tongue, and knowledge he had of many things yet unrevealed to men. And seeing the favour that he had of their lord, all the counsellors began to fawn upon him, save one alone, Amandil, lord of Andunya. Then slowly a change came over the land, and the hearts of the elf friends were sorely troubled, and many fell away out of fear. And although those that remained still called themselves the Faithful, their enemies named them rebels. For now, Having the ears of men, Sauron with many arguments gainsaid all that the Valar had taught. And he bade men think that in the world, in the east and even in the west, there lay yet many seas and many lands for their winning, wherein was wealth uncounted. And still, if they should at the last come to the end of those lands and seas, beyond all lay the ancient darkness. And out of it the world was made, for darkness alone is worshipful, and the Lord thereof may yet make other worlds to be gifts to those that serve him, so that the increase of their power shall find no end. And Ar-Pharazôn said, Who is the Lord of the Darkness? Then behind locked doors Sauron spoke to the king, and he lied, saying, It is he whose name is not now spoken. For the Valar have deceived you concerning him, putting forward the name of Eru. A phantom devised in the folly of their hearts, seeking to entrain men in servitude to themselves, for they are the oracle of this Eru, which speaks only what they will. But he that is their master shall yet prevail, and he will deliver you from this phantom, and his name is Melkor, Lord of all, giver of freedom, and he shall make you stronger than they. Then Ar-Pharazôn the king turned back to the worship of the dark, and of Melkor, the lord thereof, at first in secret, but ere long openly, and in the face of his people. And they for the most part followed him. Yet there dwelt still a remnant of the faithful, as has been told, at Romena, and in the country near, and other few there were here and there in the land. The chief among them, to whom they looked for leading and courage in evil days, was Amandil, counsellor of the king, and his son Elendil, whose sons were Isildur and Anarion, then young men by the reckoning of Numenor. Amandil and Elendil were great ship captains, and they were of the line of Elros Tar-Minyatur, though not of the ruling house, to whom belonged the crown and the throne in the city of Armenelos. In the days of their youth together, Amandil had been dear to Pharazôn, and though he was of the elf friends, he remained in his council until the coming of Sauron. Now he was dismissed, for Sauron hated him above all others in Numenor. But he was so noble, and had been so mighty a captain of the sea, that he was still held in honour by many of the people, and neither the king nor Sauron dared to lay hands on him as yet. Therefore Amandil withdrew to Romena, and all that he trusted still to be faithful he summoned to come thither in secret, for he feared that evil would now grow apace, and all the elf friends were in peril. And so it soon came to pass. For the Meneltarma was utterly deserted in those days, and though not even Sauron dared to defile the high place, yet the king would let no man, upon pain of death, ascend to it, not even those of the faithful who kept Ilúvatar in their hearts. And Sauron urged the king to cut down the white tree, Nimloth the Fair, that grew in his courts, for it was a memorial of the Eldar and of the light of Valinor. At the first the king would not assent to this, since he believed that the fortunes of his house were bound up with the tree, as was forespoken by Tar-Palantir. Thus in his folly, he who now hated the Eldar and the Valar vainly clung to the shadow of the old allegiance of Numenor. But when Amandil heard rumour of the evil purpose of Sauron, he was grieved to the heart, knowing that in the end Sauron would surely have his will. Then he spoke to Elendil and the sons of Elendil, recalling the tale of the trees of Valinor. And Isildur said no word, but went out by night and did a deed for which he was afterwards renowned. For he passed alone in disguise to Armenolos and into the courts of the king, which were now forbidden to the faithful. And he came to the place of the tree, which was forbidden to all by the orders of Sauron. And the tree was watched by day and night by guards in his service. At that time Nimloth was dark and bore no bloom, for it was late in the autumn, and its winter was nigh. And Isildur passed through the guards, and took from the tree a fruit that hung upon it, and turned to go. But the guard was aroused, and he was assailed, and fought his way out, receiving many wounds, and he escaped. And because he was disguised, it was not discovered who had laid hands on the tree. But Isildur came at last hardly back to Romena, and delivered the fruit to the hands of Amandil, ere his strength failed him. Then the fruit was planted in secret, and it was blessed by Amandil, and a shoot arose from it and sprouted in the spring. But when its first leaf opened, then Isildur, who had lain long and come near to death, arose and was troubled no more by his wounds. None too soon was this done, for after the assault the king yielded to Sauron and felled the white tree, and turned then wholly away from the allegiance of his fathers. But Sauron caused to be built upon the hill, in the midst of the city of the Numenoreans, Armenolos the Golden, a mighty temple. And it was in the form of a circle at the base, and there the walls were 50 feet in thickness, and the width of the base was 500 feet across the centre. And the walls rose from the ground 500 feet, and they were crowned with a mighty dome, and that dome was roofed all with silver, and rose glittering in the sun, so that the light of it could be seen afar off. But soon the light was darkened, and the silver became black. For there was an altar of fire in the midst of the temple, and in the topmost of the dome there was a louver, whence there issued a great smoke. And the first fire upon the altar Sauron kindled with the hewn wood of Nimloth. And it crackled and was consumed. But men marvelled at the reek that went up from it, so that the land lay under a cloud for 7 days, until slowly it passed into the west. Thereafter the fire and smoke went up without ceasing, for the power of Sauron daily increased, and in that temple, with spilling of blood and torment and great wickedness, men made sacrifice to Melkor, that he should release them from death. And most often from among the faithful they chose their victims. Yet never openly on the charge that they would not worship Melkor, the giver of freedom. Rather was cause sought against them that they hated the king and were his rebels, or that they plotted against their kin, devising lies and poisons. These charges were for the most part false, yet those were bitter days, and hate brings forth hate. But for all this, death did not depart from the land. Rather, it came sooner and more often, and in many dreadful guises. For whereas aforetime men had grown slowly old, and had laid them down in the end to sleep, when they were weary at last of the world, now madness and sickness assailed them. And yet they were afraid to die, and go out into the dark, the realm of the Lord that they had taken. And they cursed themselves in their agony. And men took weapons in those days, and slew one another, for little cause. For they were become quick to anger. And Sauron, or those whom he had bound to himself, went about the land setting man against man, so that the people murmured against the king and the lords, or against any that had aught that they had not, and the men of power took cruel revenge. Nonetheless, for long it seemed to the Numenoreans that they prospered, and if they were not increased in happiness, yet they grew more strong, and their rich men ever richer. For with the aid and counsel of Sauron, they multiplied their possessions, and they devised engines, and they built ever greater ships. And they sailed now with power and armoury to Middle-earth, and they came no longer as bringers of gifts, nor even as rulers, but as fierce men of war. And they hunted the men of Middle-earth, and took their goods, and enslaved them, and many they slew cruelly upon their altars. For they built in their fortresses temples and great tombs in those days, and men feared them, and the memory of the kindly kings of the ancient days faded from the world, and was darkened by many a tale of dread. Thus Ar-Pharazôn, king of the land of the star, grew to the mightiest tyrant that had yet been in the world since the reign of Morgoth, though in truth Sauron ruled all from behind the throne. But the years passed, and the king felt the shadow of death approach, as his days lengthened, and he was filled with fear and wrath. Now came the hour that Sauron had prepared and long had awaited. And Sauron spoke to the king, saying that his strength was now so great that he might think to have his will in all things and be subject to no command or ban. And he said, "The Valar have possessed themselves of the land where there is no death, and they lie to you concerning it, hiding it as best they may because of their avarice and their fear, lest the kings of men should wrest from them the deathless realm, and rule the world in their stead. And though, doubtless, the gift of life unending is not for all, but only for such as are worthy, being men of might and pride and great lineage, yet against all justice is it done, that this gift which is his due should be withheld from the King of Kings, Ar-Pharazôn, mightiest of the sons of earth, to whom Manwë alone can be compared, if even he. But great kings do not brook denials, and take what is their due." Then Ar-Pharazôn, being besotted, and walking under the shadow of death, for his span was drawing towards its end, hearkened to Sauron, and he began to ponder in his heart how he might make war upon the Valar. He was long preparing this design, and he spoke not openly of it, yet it could not be hidden from all. And Amandil, becoming aware of the purposes of the king, was dismayed and filled with a great dread, for he knew that men could not vanquish the Valar in war, and that ruin must come upon the world if this war were not stayed. Therefore he called his son Elendil, and he said to him, "The days are dark, and there is no hope for men, for the faithful are few. Therefore I am minded to try that counsel which our forefather Earendil took of old, to sail into the west, be there ban or no, and to speak to the Valar, even to Manwë himself, if may be, and beseech his aid ere all is lost."
"Would you then betray the king?" said Elendil. "For you know well the charge that they make against us, that we are traitors and spies, and that until this day it has been false."
"If I thought that Manwë needed such a messenger," said Amandil, "I would betray the king. For there is but one loyalty from which no man can be absolved in heart for any cause. But it is for mercy upon men, and their deliverance from Sauron the Deceiver, that I would plead, since some at least have remained faithful. And as for the ban, I will suffer in myself the penalty, lest all my people should become guilty. But what think you, my father, is like to befall those of your house whom you leave behind when your deed becomes known?"
"It must not become known," said Amandil.
"I will prepare my going in secret, and I will set sail into the east whither daily the ships depart from our havens. And thereafter, as wind and chance may allow, I will go about, through south or north, back into the west, and seek what I may find. But for you and your folk, my son, I counsel that you should prepare yourselves other ships, and put aboard all such things as your hearts cannot bear to part with. And when the ships are ready, you should lie in the haven of Romenna, and give out among men that you purpose, when you see your time, to follow me into the east. Amandil is no longer so dear to our kinsmen upon the throne that he will grieve over much if we seek to depart for a season or for good. But let it not be seen that you intend to take many men, or he will be troubled because of the war that he now plots, for which he will need all the force that he may gather. Seek out the faithful that are known still to be true, and let them join you in secret if they are willing to go with you and share in your design."
"And what shall that design be?" said Elendil. "To meddle not in the war, and to watch," answered Amandil.
"Until I return, I can say no more. But it is most like that you shall fly from the land of the star with no star to guide you, for that land is defiled. Then you shall lose all that you have loved, foretasting death in life, seeking a land of exile elsewhere. But east or west, the Valar alone can say." Then Amandil said farewell to all his household as one that is about to die. "For," said he, "it may well prove that you shall see me never again, and that I shall show you no such sign as Earendil showed long ago. But hold you ever in readiness, for the end of the world that we have known is now at hand." It is said that Amandil set sail in a small ship at night, and steered first eastward, and then went about and passed into the west. And he took with him three servants dear to his heart, and never again were they heard of by word or sign in this world, nor is there any tale or guess of their fate. Men could not a second time be saved by any such embassy, and for the treason of Numenor there was no easy absolving. But Elendil did all that his father had bidden, and his ships lay off the east coast of the land, and the faithful put aboard their wives and their children and their heirlooms and great store of goods. Many things there were of beauty and power, such as the Numenorians had contrived in the days of their wisdom, vessels and jewels, and scrolls of lore written in scarlet and black. And 7 stones they had, the gift of the Eldar. But in the ship of Isildur was guarded the young tree, the scion of Nimloth the Fair. Thus Elendil held himself in readiness, and did not meddle in the evil deeds of those days, and ever he looked for a sign that did not come. Then he journeyed in secret to the western shores, and gazed out over the sea, for sorrow and yearning were upon him, and he greatly loved his father. But naught could he descry save the fleets of Ar-Pharazôn gathering in the havens of the west. Now aforetime in the isle of Numenor the weather was ever apt to the needs and liking of men, rain in due season and ever in measure, and sunshine now warmer, now cooler, and winds from the sea. And when the wind was in the west, it seemed to many that it was filled with a fragrance, fleeting but sweet, heart-stirring, as of flowers that bloom forever in undying meads and have no names on mortal shores. But all this was now changed, for the sky itself was darkened, and there were storms of rain and hail in those days, and violent winds, and ever and anon a great ship of the Numenorians would founder and return not to haven, though such a grief had not till then befallen them since the rising of the star. And out of the west there would come at times a great cloud in the evening, shaped as it were an eagle, with pinions spread to the north and the south. And slowly it would loom up, blotting out the sunset, and then uttermost night would fall upon Numenor. And some of the eagles bore lightning beneath their wings, and thunder echoed between sea and cloud. Then men grew afraid. "Behold, the eagles of the lords of the west," they cried. "The eagles of Manwë are come upon Numenor!" And they fell upon their faces. Then some few would repent, for a season, but others hardened their hearts, and they shook their fists at heaven, saying, "The lords of the west have plotted against us. They strike first. The next blow shall be ours." These words the king himself spoke, but they were devised by Sauron. Now the lightnings increased and slew men upon the hills, and in the fields, and in the streets of the city, and a fiery bolt smote the dome of the temple and shore it asunder, and it was wreathed in flame. but the temple itself was unshaken. And Sauron stood there upon the pinnacle and defied the lightning and was unharmed. And in that hour men called him a god and did all that he would. When therefore the last portent came, they heeded it little. For the land shook under them, and a groaning as of thunder underground was mingled with the roaring of the sea, and smoke issued from the peak of the Meneltarma. But all the more did Ard-Pharazôn press on with his armament. In that time the fleets of the Numenoreans darkened the sea upon the west of the land, and they were like an archipelago of a thousand isles. Their masts were as a forest upon the mountains, and their sails like a brooding cloud, and their banners were golden and black, and all things waited upon the word of Ard-Pharazôn. And Sauron withdrew into the inmost circle of the temple, and men brought him victims to be burned. Then the eagles of the lords of the west came up out of the dayfall, and they were arrayed as for battle, advancing in a line the end of which diminished beyond sight. And as they came, their wings spread ever wider, grasping the sky. But the west burned red behind them, and they glowed beneath, as though they were lit with a flame of great anger, so that all Numenor was illumined as with a smouldering fire. And men looked upon the faces of their fellows, and it seemed to them that they were red with wrath. Then Ard-Pharazôn hardened his heart, and he went aboard his mighty ship, Al-Carondas, Castle of the Sea. Many oared it was, and many masted, golden and sable. And upon it the throne of Ard-Pharazôn was set. Then he did on his panoply and his crown, and let raise his standard, and he gave the signal for the raising of the anchors. And in that hour the trumpets of Numenor outrang the thunder. Thus the fleets of the Numenoreans moved against the menace of the west, and there was little wind, but they had many oars and many strong slaves to row beneath the lash. The sun went down, and there came a great silence. Darkness fell upon the land, and the sea was still, while the world waited for what should betide. Slowly the fleets passed out of the sight of the watchers in the havens, and their lights faded, and night took them, and in the morning they were gone. For a wind arose in the east, and it wafted them away, and they broke the ban of the Valar, and sailed into forbidden seas, going up with war against the deathless, to wrest from them everlasting life within the circles of the world. But the fleets of Ard-Pharazôn came up out of the deeps of the sea, and encompassed Avalone and all the isles of Eressëa. And the Eldar mourned, for the light of the setting sun was cut off by the cloud of the Numenoreans. And at last Ard-Pharazôn came even to Aman, the blessed realm, and the coasts of Valinor. And still all was silent, and doom hung by a thread. For Ard-Pharazôn wavered at the end, and almost he turned back. His heart misgave him when he looked upon the soundless shores, and saw Taniquetil shining whiter than snow, colder than death, silent, immutable, terrible as the shadow of the light of Ilúvatar. But pride was now his master, and at last he left his ship and strode upon the shore, claiming the land for his own, if none should do battle for it. And a host of the Numenoreans encamped in might about Tunar, whence all the Eldar had fled. Then Manwë, upon the mountain, called upon Ilúvatar, and for that time the Valar laid down their government of Arda. But Ilúvatar showed forth his power, and he changed the fashion of the world. And a great chasm opened in the sea between Numenor and the deathless lands, and the waters flowed down into it, and the noise and smoke of the cataracts went up to heaven, and the world was shaken. And all the fleets of the Numenoreans were drawn down into the abyss, and they were drowned and swallowed up forever. But Ard-Pharazôn the king and the mortal warriors that had set foot upon the land of Aman were buried under falling hills. There, it is said, that they lie imprisoned in the caves of the Forgotten until the last battle and the day of doom. But the land of Aman and Eressëa of the Eldar were taken away and removed beyond the reach of men forever, and Andor, the land of gift, Numenor of the kings, Elenor of the Starred of Eärendil, was utterly destroyed. For it was nigh to the east of the great rift, and its foundations were overturned, and it fell and went down into darkness, and is no more. And there is not now upon earth any place abiding where the memory of a time without evil is preserved. For Ilúvatar cast back the great seas west of Middle-earth, and the empty lands east of it, and new lands and new seas were made, and the world was diminished, for Valinor and Eressëa were taken from it into the realm of hidden things. In an hour unlooked for by men, this doom befell on the 39th day since the passing of the fleets. Then suddenly fire burst from the Meneltarma, and there came a mighty wind and a tumult of the earth, and the sky reeled and the hills slid, and Numenor went down into the sea with all its children and its wives and its maidens and its ladies proud, and all its gardens and its halls and its towers, its tombs and its riches and its jewels and its webs and its things painted and carven, and its laughter and its mirth and its music, its wisdom and its law. They vanished forever. And last of all, the mounting wave, green and cold and plumed with foam, climbing over the land, took to its bosom Tar Miriel the Queen, fairer than silver or ivory or pearls. Too late she strove to ascend the steep ways of the Meneltarma to the holy place, for the waters overtook her, and her cry was lost in the roaring of the wind. But whether or no it were that Amandil came indeed to Valinor, and Manwë hearkened to his prayer, by grace of the Valar, Elendil and his sons and their people were spared from the ruin of that day. For Elendil had remained in Romenna, refusing the summons of the king when he set forth to war, and avoiding the soldiers of Sauron that came to seize him and drag him to the fires of the temple, he went aboard his ship and stood off from the shore, waiting on the time. There he was protected by the land from the great draught of the sea that drew all towards the abyss, and afterwards he was sheltered from the first fury of the storm. But when the devouring wave rolled over the land and Numenor toppled to its fall, then he would have been overwhelmed and would have deemed it the lesser grief to perish, for no wrench of death could be more bitter than the loss and agony of that day. But the great wind took him, wilder than any wind that men had known, roaring from the west, and it swept his ships far away, and it rent their sails and snapped their masts, hunting the unhappy men like straws upon the water. 9 ships there were, 4 for Elendil, and for Isildur, 3, and for Anarion, 2. And they fled before the black gale out of the twilight of doom into the darkness of the world. And the deeps rose beneath them in towering anger, and waves like unto mountains moving with great caps of writhen snow bore them up amid the wreckage of the clouds, and after many days cast them away upon the shores of Middle-earth. And all the coasts and seaward regions of the western world suffered great change and ruin in that time. For the seas invaded the lands, and shores foundered, and ancient isles were drowned, and new isles were uplifted, and hills crumbled, and rivers were turned into strange courses. Elendil and his sons after founded kingdoms in Middle-earth, and though their lore and craft was but an echo of that which had been ere Sauron came to Numenor, yet very great it seemed to the wild men of the world. And much is said in other lore of the deeds of the heirs of Elendil in the age that came after, and of their strife with Sauron that not yet was ended. For Sauron himself was filled with great fear at the wrath of the Valar, and the doom that Eru laid upon sea and land. It was greater far than aught he had looked hoping only for the death of the Numenoreans and the defeat of their proud king. And Sauron, sitting in his black seat in the midst of the temple, had laughed when he heard the trumpets of Ar-Pharazôn sounding for battle. And again he had laughed when he heard the thunder of the storm. And a third time, even as he laughed at his own thought, thinking what he would do now in the world, being rid of the Edain forever, he was taken in the midst of his mirth, and his seat and his temple fell into the abyss. But Sauron was not of mortal flesh, and though he was robbed now of that shape in which he had wrought so great an evil, so that he could never again appear fair to the eyes of men, yet his spirit arose out of the deep, and passed as a shadow and a black wind over the sea, and came back to Middle-earth, and to Mordor, that was his home. There he took up again his great ring in Barad-dûr, and dwelt there, dark and silent, until he wrought himself a new guise, an image of malice and hatred made visible, and the eye of Sauron the Terrible few could endure. But these things come not into the tale of the drowning of Numenor, of which now all is told. And even the name of that land perished, and men spoke thereafter not of Elena, nor of Andor the gift that was taken away, nor of Numenora on the confines of the world. But the exiles on the shores of the sea, if they turned towards the west in the desire of their hearts, spoke of Mar Nufalmar, that was whelmed in the waves, Akalabeth the downfallen, Atalanta in the Eldarin tongue. Among the exiles, many believed that the summit of the Meneltarma, the pillar of heaven, was not drowned for ever, but rose again above the waves, a lonely island lost in the great waters. For it had been a hallowed place, and even in the days of Sauron none had defiled it. And some there were of the seed of Earendil, that afterward sought for it, because it was said among lawmasters that the far-sighted men of old could see from the Meneltarma a glimmer of the deathless land. For even after the ruin, the hearts of the Dúnedain were still set westwards. And though they knew indeed that the world was changed, they said, Avalone is vanished from the earth, and the land of Aman is taken away, and in the world of this present darkness they cannot be found. Yet once they were, and therefore they still are, in true being, and in the whole shape of the world, as at first it was devised. For the Dúnedain held that even mortal men, if so blessed, might look upon other times than those of their body's life. And they longed ever to escape from the shadows of their exile, and to see in some fashion the light that dies not. For the sorrow of the thought of death had pursued them over the deeps of the sea. Thus it was that great mariners among them would still search the empty seas, hoping to come upon the isle of Meneltarma, and there to see a vision of things that were. But they found it not. And those that sailed far came only to the new lands, and found them like to the old lands, and subject to death. And those that sailed furthest set but a girdle about the earth, and returned weary at last to the place of their beginning, and they said, All roads are now bent. Thus in after days, what by the voyages of ships, what by lord and starcraft, the kings of men knew that the world was indeed made round. And yet the Eldar were permitted still to depart and to come to the ancient west, and to Avalone if they would. Therefore the lawmasters of men said that a straight road must still be for those that were permitted to find it. And they taught that, while the new world fell away, the old road and the path of the memory of the West still went on, as it were, a mighty bridge invisible that passed through the air of breath and of flight, which were bent now as the world was bent, and traversed Ilmen, which flesh unaided cannot endure, until it came to Tol Eressëa, the lonely isle, and maybe even beyond to Valinor, where the Valar still dwell and watch the unfolding of the story of the world. And tales and rumors arose along the shores of the sea concerning mariners and men forlorn upon the water who, by some fate or grace or favor of the Valar, had entered in upon the straight way and seen the face of the world sink below them, and so had come to the lamplit quays of Avalone, or verily, to the last beaches on the margin of Ammon, and there had looked upon the white mountain, dreadful and beautiful, before they died. Of the Rings of Power and the Third Age, in which these tales come to their end. Of old, there was Sauron the Maia, whom the Sindar in Beleriand named Gorthaur. In the beginning of Arda, Melkor seduced him to his allegiance, and he became the greatest and most trusted of the servants of the enemy, and the most perilous, for he could assume many forms, and for long, if he willed, he could still appear noble and beautiful, so as to deceive all but the most wary. When Thangorodrim was broken and Morgoth overthrown, Sauron put on his fair hue again and did obeisance to Eonwë, the herald of Manwë, and abjured all his evil deeds. And some hold that this was not at first falsely done, but that Sauron in truth repented, if only out of fear, being dismayed by the fall of Morgoth and the great wrath of the lords of the West. But it was not within the power of Eonwë to pardon those of his own order, and he commanded Sauron to return to Aman and there receive the judgment of Manwë. Then Sauron was ashamed, and he was unwilling to return in humiliation and to receive from the Valar a sentence, it might be, of long servitude in proof of his good faith. For under Morgoth his power had been great. Therefore, when Eonwë departed, he hid himself in Middle-earth, and he fell back into evil, for the bonds that Morgoth had laid upon him were very strong. In the great battle and the tumults of the fall of Thangorodrim, there were mighty convulsions in the earth, and Beleriand was broken and laid waste. And northward and westward many lands sank beneath the waters of the great sea. In the east, in Osiriand, the walls of Ered Luin were broken, and a great gap was made in them towards the south, and a gulf of the sea flowed in. Into that gulf the river Lun fell by a new course, and it was called, therefore, the Gulf of Lun. That country had of old been named Lindon by the Noldor, and this name it bore thereafter. and many of the Eldar still dwelt there, lingering, unwilling yet to forsake Beleriand, where they had fought and laboured long. Gil-galad, son of Fingon, was their king, and with him was Elrond, half-elven, son of Eärendil the Mariner, and brother of Elros, first king of Númenor. Upon the shores of the Gulf of Lún, the elves built their havens and named them Mithlond, and there they held many ships, for the harbourage was good. From the grey havens, the Eldar ever and anon set sail, fleeing from the darkness of the days of earth. For, by the mercy of the Valar, the firstborn could still follow the straight road, and return, if they would, to their kindred in Eressëa and Valinor beyond the encircling seas. Others of the Eldar there were, who crossed the mountains of Ered Luin in that age, and passed into the inner lands. Many of these were Teleri, survivors of Doriath and Osiriand, and they established realms among the Sylvan Elves in woods and mountains far from the sea, for which, nonetheless, they ever yearned in their hearts. Only in Eregion, which men called Holin, did elves of Noldorin race establish a lasting realm beyond the Ered Luin. Eregion was nigh to the great mansions of the dwarves that were named Khazad-dûm, but by the elves Hathadrond, and afterwards Moria. From Ost in Ethil, the city of the elves, the high road ran to the west gate of Khazad-dûm. For a friendship arose between dwarves and elves, such as has never elsewhere been, to the enrichment of both those peoples. In Eregion, the craftsmen of the Gwaith Irmirdain, the people of the jewelsmiths, surpassed in cunning all that have ever wrought, save only Feanor himself. And indeed, greatest in skill among them was Celebrimbor, son of Curufin, who was estranged from his father, and remained in Nargothrond when Celegorm and Curufin were driven forth, as is told in the Quenta Silmarillion. Elsewhere in Middle-earth, there was peace for many years. Yet the lands were for the most part savage and desolate, save only where the people of Beleriand came. Many elves dwelt there indeed, as they had dwelt through the countless years, wandering free in the wide lands far from the sea. But they were Avari, to whom the deeds of Beleriand were but a rumour, and Valinor only a distant name. And in the south and in the further east men multiplied, and most of them turned to evil, for Sauron was at work. Seeing the desolation of the world, Sauron said in his heart that the Valar, having overthrown Morgoth, had again forgotten Middle-earth, and his pride grew apace. He looked with hatred on the Eldar, and he feared the men of Númenor, who came back at whiles in their ships to the shores of Middle-earth. But for long he dissembled his mind, and concealed the dark designs that he shaped in his heart. Men he found the easiest to sway of all the peoples of the earth, but long he sought to persuade the elves to his service, for he knew that the firstborn had the greater power, and he went far and wide among them, and his hue was still that of one both fair and wise. Only to Lindon he did not come, for Gil-galad and Elrond doubted him and his fair seeming, and though they knew not who in truth he was, they would not admit him to that land. But elsewhere the elves received him gladly, and few among them hearkened to the messengers from Lindon, bidding them beware. For Sauron took to himself the name of Anatar, the Lord of Gifts, and they had at first much profit from his friendship. And he said to them, "Alas for the weakness of the great! For a mighty king is Gil-galad, and wise in all lore is Master Elrond, and yet they will not aid me in my labours. Can it be that they do not desire to see other lands become as blissful as their own? But wherefore should Middle-earth remain forever desolate and dark, whereas the elves could make it as fair as Eressëa, nay, even as Valinor? And since you have not returned thither, as you might, I perceive that you love this Middle-earth, as do I." Is it not then our task to labour together for its enrichment, and for the raising of all the elven kindreds that wander here untaught, to the height of that power and knowledge which those have who are beyond the sea? It was in Eregion that the counsels of Sauron were most gladly received, for in that land the Noldor desired ever to increase the skill and subtlety of their works. Moreover, they were not at peace in their hearts, since they had refused to return into the West, and they desired both to stay in Middle-earth, which indeed they loved, and yet to enjoy the bliss of those that had departed. Therefore they hearkened to Sauron, and they learned of him many things, for his knowledge was great. In those days the smiths of Ost in Ethil surpassed all that they had contrived before, and they took thought, and they made rings of power. But Sauron guided their labours, and he was aware of all that they did, for his desire was to set a bond upon the elves, and to bring them under his vigilance. Now the elves made many rings, but secretly Sauron made one ring to rule all the others, and their power was bound up with it, to be subject wholly to it, and to last only so long as it too should last. And much of the strength and will of Sauron passed into that one ring. For the power of the elven rings was very great, and that which should govern them must be a thing of surpassing potency. And Sauron forged it in the mountain of fire in the land of shadow. And while he wore the one ring, he could perceive all the things that were done by means of the lesser rings, and he could see and govern the very thoughts of those that wore them. But the elves were not so likely to be caught. As soon as Sauron set the one ring upon his finger, they were aware of him, and they knew him, and perceived that he would be master of them, and of all that they wrought. Then in anger and fear they took off their rings. But he, finding that he was betrayed and that the elves were not deceived, was filled with wrath, and he came against them with open war, demanding that all the rings should be delivered to him, since the elven smiths could not have attained to their making without his lord and counsel. But the elves fled from him, and three of their rings they saved, and bore them away and hid them. Now these were the three that had last been made, and they possessed the greatest powers. Narya, Nenya, and Vilya they were named, the rings of fire and of water and of air, set with ruby and adamant and sapphire. And of all the elven rings, Sauron most desired to possess them, for those who had them in their keeping could ward off the decays of time and postpone the weariness of the world. But Sauron could not discover them, for they were given into the hands of the wise, who concealed them and never again used them openly, while Sauron kept the ruling ring. Therefore the three remained unsullied, for they were forged by Celebrimbor alone, and the hand of Sauron had never touched them. Yet they also were subject to the One. From that time war never ceased between Sauron and the elves, and Eregion was laid waste, and Celebrimbor slain, and the doors of Moria were shut. In that time the stronghold and refuge of Imladris, that men called Rivendell, was founded by Elrond half-elven, and long it endured. But Sauron gathered into his hands all the remaining rings of power, and he dealt them out to the other peoples of Middle-earth, hoping thus to bring under his sway all those that desired secret power beyond the measure of their kind. Seven rings he gave to the dwarves, but to men he gave nine, for men proved in this matter, as in others, the readiest to his will. And all those rings that he governed he perverted, the more easily since he had a part in their making, and they were accursed, and they betrayed in the end all those that used them. The dwarves indeed proved tough and hard to tame. They ill endure the domination of others, and the thoughts of their hearts are hard to fathom, nor can they be turned to shadows. They used their rings only for the getting of wealth. But wrath and an overmastering greed of gold were kindled in their hearts, of which evil enough after came to the prophet of Sauron. It is said that the foundation of each of the seven hordes of the dwarf kings of old was a golden ring. But all those hordes long ago were plundered, and the dragons devoured them. And of the seven rings, some were consumed in fire, and some Sauron recovered. Men proved easier to ensnare. Those who used the nine rings became mighty in their day, kings, sorcerers, and warriors of old. They obtained glory and great wealth, yet it turned to their undoing. They had, as it seemed, unending life, yet life became unendurable to them. They could walk, if they would, unseen by all eyes in this world beneath the sun, and they could see things in worlds invisible to mortal men. But too often they beheld only the phantoms and delusions of Sauron. And one by one, sooner or later, according to their native strength and to the good or evil of their wills in the beginning, they fell under the thraldom of the ring that they bore, and under the domination of the One, which was Sauron's. And they became forever invisible save to him that wore the ruling ring, and they entered into the realm of shadows. The Nazgûl were they, the ring-wraiths, the enemy's most terrible servants. Darkness went with them, and they cried with the voices of death. Now Sauron's lust and pride increased until he knew no bounds, and he determined to make himself master of all things in Middle-earth, and to destroy the elves, and to compass, if he might, the downfall of Numenor. He brooked no freedom nor any rivalry, and he named himself Lord of the Earth. A mask he could still wear, so that if he wished he might deceive the eyes of men, seeming to them wise and fair. But he ruled rather by force and fear, if they might avail, and those who perceived his shadow spreading over the world called him the Dark Lord, and named him the Enemy. And he gathered again under his government all the evil things of the days of Morgoth that remained on earth or beneath it. And the orcs were at his command and multiplied like flies. Thus the Black Years began, which the elves call the Days of Flight. In that time, many of the elves of Middle-earth fled to Lindon, and thence over the seas never to return, and many were destroyed by Sauron and his servants. But in Lindon, Gil-galad still maintained his power, and Sauron dared not as yet to pass the mountains of Ered-Luin, nor to assail the havens. And Gil-galad was aided by the Numenoreans. Elsewhere, Sauron reigned, and those who would be free took refuge in the fastnesses of wood and mountain, and ever fear pursued them. In the east and south, well nigh all men were under his dominion, and they grew strong in those days, and built many towns and walls of stone. And they were numerous and fierce in war, and armed with iron. To them Sauron was both king and god, and they feared him exceedingly, for he surrounded his abode with fire. Yet there came at length a stay in the onslaught of Sauron upon the Westlands. For, as is told in the Akalabeth, he was challenged by the might of Numenor. So great was the power and splendour of the Numenoreans in the noontide of their realm, that the servants of Sauron would not withstand them, and hoping to accomplish by cunning what he could not achieve by force, he left Middle-earth for a while, and went to Numenor as a hostage of Tarkalion the king. And there he abode, until at the last, by his craft, he had corrupted the hearts of most of that people, and set them at war with the Valar, and so compassed their ruin, as he had long desired. But that ruin was more terrible than Sauron had foreseen, for he had forgotten the might of the lords of the West in their anger. The world was broken, and the land was swallowed up, and the seas rose over it, and Sauron himself went down into the abyss. But his spirit arose, and fled back on a dark wind to Middle-earth, seeking a home. There he found that the power of Gil-galad had grown great in the years of his absence, and it was spread now over wide regions of the north and west, and had passed beyond the misty mountains and the great river, even to the borders of Greenwood the Great, and was drawing nigh to the strong place.